Welcome to the Mayo News Football Podcast. This is our Any Other Crack episode. This is not Mike Finnerty or this is not Rob Murphy. This is Gerard Flanagan filling in for the very big shoes of the two lads who are off gallivanting, I think, taking a bit of a sabbatical after their, in fairness, last couple of tough months of work. I think Mike is out lying on some sun lounger in the Hamptons and Rob is, well, I don't know where Rob is. He's the international man of mystery. There's some rumours that he's in Dubai or Asia, but who knows? But two lads I am joined with for the night, John Gunning and Stephen Drake. You don't look like to be ventured too far from your bedrooms or back rooms. How are you, lads?
Good, Ger.
Yeah, pretty good, Ger. Ger, you're seeing that this is my isolation suite for my recent close encounter with COVID. So, yeah, I haven't been wandering too far at all.
Well, you're sounding good, Johnny. But that's all that matters.
Yeah, yeah. Though, well, I'm kind of getting there. It's a bit of a slow. It's not a seamless process. But what I do have to say, I did have one big benefit from having COVID recently, and that was the fact that I didn't have to go to Croke Park on Sunday week. So maybe we'll come back to that.
Saved the English.
Yeah. Don't mention the war, Ricky. Were you up there?
I was, unfortunately. Yeah. With myself and Rob. Yeah, the less said about it, the better, I think. But just you mentioned Finno there. I'm meeting Finno next weekend in Wexford Park. Supporting my adopted county in the first round of the Leinster Championship, and I think we're hitting Wexford Town after it. So I'll have to show them the sights. Looking forward to talking. Putting forward my immense hurling knowledge now at this stage.
God, it's mad stuff, though, isn't it? Like championship starting next weekend because Cork and Limerick are going hammer and tongs at each other in the hurling, and Tyrone are out. Like first weekend of the championship, they're actually hitting the field, which is just bonkers.
Yeah, well, if you can call it a game, John, it might be a bit of a procession, but yeah, it's mad. Like what, for first, second weekend in April, it's just unreal. Yeah, different times.
Out about. I'm looking forward to hearing about that on next week's podcast or when
Trevor
you're
Watson,
on next
as well. So yeah, it's
Trevor Watson. Wow, the dream team, the three musketeers.
Moving
swiftly on, lads. Going from Croke Park to McHale Park. News just broke there before we came on that the Connacht GAA Senior Football Final quarterfinal, should I say, between Mayo and Galway will officially take place in Hastings Insurance McHale Park on the 24th of April at 4 p.m. News that we, for a while, did not expect to come, but I think we're all happy now. Details of the tickets to be later announced. But lads, John, I'll come to you first here. What's the immediate reaction about having the Connacht final in McHale Park confirmed?
Well, I think everyone will be happy that the Galway game is going ahead because there was so much uncertainty about it, I think, for so many months. And I think everyone will be very interested to see what the famous pitch is going to be like. There's been so much talk about it. We've seen all the photographs, we've seen all the drone footage and all the rest. It looks to be great. And I think to have a surface where the ball bounces up nicely to you and that really supports the fast kind of game we play. So I think everyone will be delighted that we will be back at home. It adds, I have a certain, I've mixed thoughts about it. I like being on the road for the league because it certainly cut down my mileage for those inverted commas home games. But I'm just going to have to suck it up on Sunday week.
Drakey, happy it's in McHale Park?
Ah, yeah, look, it's great to see. It's great to get this off the table at this stage. We've been talking about this pitch now for, it seems like, an eternity. So, yeah, again, as John said, really interested to see what it looks like. It looks fantastic in the drone footage and the stuff that the county board have been putting out. And again, it really, look, it's a pitch now befitting of the team that we've had over the last decade or so. And again, we never really had a pitch that sort of suited the style of play that we employ. So it'll be really interesting to see what the track looks like, and it'll be really interesting to see how the boys fare in it. So great to get back to McHale Park for championship, and it'll be a great occasion. I think people are ready to go now at this stage. We haven't been there in a while with a big crowd, so it should be good fun.
Yeah, lads, you've obviously both played on it. So what do you think the significance is of the lengthening of the pitch? I don't know. It hasn't been lengthened by a whole pile, but it has been by a bit. Will that make any appreciable difference, do you think? It has been widened, clearly, but...
Yeah, it's hard to know. I actually, I was under the understanding that it was actually going to be longer than what it is. So, you know, I don't know, is it going to have a massive effect? But I know I'm reliably informed that the Mayo seniors had a training camp in there from Friday to Sunday just last weekend. The new goalpost went in, and apparently the service is top quality. It's very, very good. And, you know, I think with the surface that good compared to what it was in the past, even if the pitch is not that much bigger, I think it'll definitely influence a better game of football, and it'll probably feel like a much bigger pitch. I don't know. Do you feel the same way, Drake, here?
Yeah, look, at county level, you know, it won't affect the guys too much. You know, they're extremely well conditioned. I think maybe one or two club players will be complaining once we get to county quarterfinals this year that it's probably a bit too long. I know I certainly would have if I was still there. But, like, you know, I think the biggest thing with the pitch and the surface over the years has been, you know, the inconsistency of it throughout the year. So, you know, at stages throughout the year, you know, it would have been good. But, you know, there were certain stages throughout the year that it was like a bog at times, and at different areas of the pitch. Again, the area that got covered by the stand that didn't get enough, you know, that much sun, parts of that area was very, very heavy at times during the year. And you could be across the far side of the field then, it would be a lot firmer. So there was a general inconsistency with it. So to get a consistent, high quality surface throughout the year will not just benefit the senior team, it'll benefit all the teams, you know, all the underage teams, you know, men's and women's hurling, football, camogie and whatnot. So it's really positive news. And hopefully it gets us a bit more successful in McHale Park, because we've struggled there over the years. And again, probably down to the fact that the surface really didn't suit us. So, hopefully now this pitch can help us turn it into a fortress.
Yeah, I suppose it does lead on to kind of the next topic. There's been other counties in the past over the last few years who have had similar works going on in their pitch, and you know, the aftermath hasn't worked out too well. There's going to be all eyes on McHale Park for the next year to see, you know, is this pitch going to be as good as we want it to be? Is it going to be a long-lasting pitch, or, you know, have we gone back on it a bit early, and are we going to be in a situation that Cork GAA found themselves in too long ago?
Yeah, I suppose there's two things there, though, Ger, isn't it? There's a thing about the pitch itself, and largely, to some degree, we're in the lap of the gods on that, but also it's a question of to how much it's overused over the next while. And I'm sure because everyone has been out of it for so long, everyone will want to get back into it now. So I think Mayo GAA will have quite a difficult job on their hands in terms of managing access to it. And I know that, you know, I mean, Dermot Butler was quoted there only a few weeks ago saying there wouldn't be any training on it. And clearly that hasn't happened, certainly ahead of the Galway game. So I wonder, you know, how much that stricture will be kept to over the summer. But then obviously there'll be a raft of club games and all the rest that people will be looking to pay it as well. But the other thing as well about the fortress element, I mean, I guess the good thing is that we've set a very low bar in that respect. So if we've a good run of results in the next year.
We were very cute with that, actually. Yeah,
it'll feel like a fortress even if it isn't.
Yeah, no better team to start off a new era on the pitch than Galway at home, to be fair.
Yeah. It was funny, just John mentioned that. I remember when we did our pitch in Bala. Now, Ger, I know, did you play in Bala Dreams pitch pre-2012? There was an 8-foot drop from the top right-hand corner to the bottom left-hand corner. It was diabolical, but nobody could beat us on it. And I mean nobody could beat us on it. I remember Shrule coming down and Mort kick points all over the county, and he couldn't get the lie of it because you'd be at a 45-degree angle taking shots. And then when we developed it into the fabulous pitch it is now, we didn't win nearly as much. We were getting beat. So then nearly equalised it. So you can have a certain element of that. But look, it's great. It's great that it's done. It's great that it's completed now. And look, it'll look fabulous. It'll be a great spectacle against Galway. Hopefully it's a good day weather-wise and we get a great crowd. It's very exciting. Yeah, it's a good news story.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of credit has to go to everyone for getting it over the line. You know, it would have been a shame, I think, definitely, if we lost the opportunity to play this game. You know, I think particularly given how, I suppose, the bad of a performance it was against Kerry in the league final, and, you know, how kind of Galway seemed to be high-flying at the time. It definitely would have been another kind of kick kicking the stones if we didn't get the chance to play in McHale Park, if that kind of final was moved on. But just in terms of injuries, lads, as well, you know, the fallout from the league final continues. Jordan Flynn looks set to be missing from it. I'm reliably informed that Paddy Durkin and Jeremy O'Connor are only going to be returning to injury the week of the Galway game. Obviously, Oisín Mullen missed the league final. You have Brendan Harrison out. You know, the medical table is pretty busy at the minute. Are you concerned at all?
I think you have to be concerned, you know, because I think the concern is probably made even greater by the fact that there's radio silence from within the camp. Which is, I think, deeply frustrating for everyone and also quite hard to understand, because it clearly isn't a GPA-related issue. It's just that you know, the decision has been taken for whatever reason not to impart any knowledge, any information whatsoever. So, I mean, most of us know that Robbie Henley has had a procedure of some sort. We haven't heard that officially, but that seems to be a fact. We know that Jordan Flynn has a problem with his ankle, which may be a break, but again, there's no official confirmation of it. And I think it's treating Mayo supporters with a distinct lack of respect, and it comes on top of a very poor performance in a league final. And I was just thinking about it earlier on, you know, I mean, it was all right for me. There I was, stuck up in the attic all on my own. I didn't have to go anywhere or spend any money on the day. But I really would feel for families who gave up a whole Sunday, travelled across the country, and all the expense and all the time involved in that, and to see a performance like that and then not even hear from the manager afterwards to give any context to the performance. I just think, you know, Mayo GA can't be treating their supporters and they can't be taking them for granted in that manner.
Yeah, and let's not forget Brendan Harrison as well. Still no clarification on his issue, other than the medical team are still assessing him 7 days days later, I think. Tricky, frustrating from a Mayo point of view. But if you put yourself in James Horn's shoes as well, you know, can you see his side of it?
I can and I can't, right? I spoke on this before, you know. I understand, you know, a certain amount of the thought process in relation to, you know, withholding information, you know, whether or not it's going to give an advantage to the team you're playing or the opposition. What I don't like is, you know, what I don't like is the way it's put forth or lack thereof. So again, you know, something simple in relation to, you know, a statement that just to appease people and just to show a bit of respect towards people, you know, say, listen, you know, we're working through a number of injuries at the moment, some of which we really don't have, you know, full disclosure over at this point. We're still, you know, engaged with medical people trying to diagnose exactly what the issue of the problem was. You know, therefore, we can't necessarily put forward a diagnosis at this point. Understand supporters' frustrations. Understand that they really want to know what the guys are at. You look, we're working around the clock to provide the best care for the fellas. And, you know, when we have updates, you know, we'll be forthcoming in relation to that. So again, you know, it's about how you portray yourself to the people who, as John quite rightly put it, are spending huge amount of money in very, very difficult times and challenging times, you know, notwithstanding the issues that are going on in the world, you know, in relation to, you know, people, you know, struggles, you know, inflation, you know, the cost of living, et cetera, and people are still, you know, spending their hard-earned cash to watch Mayo play. So I think sort of that level of engagement and that level of sort of rapport isn't really there. So look, I wouldn't want to expect James to come out and divulge an entire game plan to us or tell us exactly what they're doing or disclose, you know, innate details around players' injuries and sort of timeframes, etc. But just to be engaged with the supporters and understand, you know, their frustrations and understand, you know, the sacrifice they make to watch Mayo play, I think we could do better in that area. But look, you know, in relation to the injuries themselves, look, they're a big worry. They're a big worry. You know, you look at some of the guys. Obviously, I was at the game. Jordan Flynn, I don't know how he got up, to be quite honest. It looked horrific at the time. I was right in the eye line of it, and it just looked very, very bad. So look, if there's something, you know, a hairline fracture there, that could be possible. And other guys as well. So look, it certainly is a worry as we go into the Galway game.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
Yeah, I think, you know, a certain part of that comes down to respect for supporters as well. And it certainly brings the GPA and current GPA squabble under the microscope even more. Moving on slightly just to the Galway injury front, no major injuries, I'm told, other than Killian McDade and Dylan McHugh, who both missed the league final but are expected to be back. Obviously, Shane Walsh has been struggling over the past few weeks and only came on later on in the league final, but from the Galway end, they are expecting them to get back. Obviously, steamrolled Division 2 Galway. We were there last year ourselves. A lot to be said for the standard compared to Division 1. John, have you been impressed by them? Are they the Galway that we might have played a couple of years back?
Yeah, it's difficult to know, but I mean, you couldn't but be impressed by a team that just keeps winning. I mean, I know they came unstuck at the end against Roscommon the last day, so they do have their own problems, you know. I mean, I do worry about them because Galway are talented enough from midfield up. And if you look at how Kerry got at us and the damage they did to us at Croke Park, then that has to be a concern. I mean, I do think at the same time Galway are weak enough at the back, and the goal they gave away at the end was totally comical. So I think we have a certain amount of hope there, you know. But I think this will be a difficult game, and this is a game that could go either way. And like, it's obviously a huge match as well, isn't it? Because whoever loses isn't out again until, I think it's the 4th of June, which is a huge gap, given the condensed season overall.
Yeah, and I suppose from a performance point of view, you know, Galway do seem to, he's still going back to the same guys. Paul Conroy still seems to be their main man in the middle of the field. You know, we give out about Aidan O'Shea's lack of mobility from our front, but you know, Paul Conroy probably falls into the same bracket. Obviously, Damon Comer is still their fulcrum of point of attack when he's on form, and if you don't have a fully fit Shane Walsh, they don't look the same threat that they potentially could be. But is James Horan thinking that way going into this game, Stephen, or how are you kind of weighing it up?
Yeah, look. I think they've improved a little bit, I have to say, but the problems that have been there for Galway over the last number of years are still there, in my opinion. Defensively, they're weak. You know, they're trying different things in relation to the makeup of their backline. Looking at Kieran Malloy at fullback, different things like that. John Daly at six the last day. Obviously, Sean Kelly has been, you know, pushed back to wing back. He's gone from wing back to midfield to wing forward. So there's been a lot of chopping and change in relation to that, and they really haven't settled on you know, a six as such. And it's probably down to the fact that they haven't got the class defender that Mayo have, not by a long shot, really. And that's really been their Achilles heel. Look, going forward, they still look very, very impressive. They have two outstanding forwards when they're fit, Shane Walsh and Damian Comer. And then the supporting cast outside that are very, very good. You know, guys like Matthew Tierney, we've been really impressed with him. Rob Finnerty, Desi Keneally have always liked. So, you know, they've got a lot of quality there. And look, and looking back to the game against Roscommon, Paul Conroy kicked 6 points from play. Like, we talk about, you know, the similarities between Paul and Aidan and probably a lack of mobility and whether they can still cut it. But probably the big difference between the two, you know, Paul Conroy will kick 3, 4, 5 points a game. You know, Aidan probably doesn't have that in his locker. Now, he does plenty of things that Paul doesn't do as well, a lot better than Paul. But like, if you have a guy in the field who's guaranteeing you 3 or 4 points a game, that's a serious weapon to have. So we have to be mindful of the fact that they have a lot of talent, you know, and a lot of scoring power from 8 up. But, you know, at the same time, they can certainly be got at. And I think, look, it's been proven over the last number of years, they don't defend well against hard-running teams. That has come to the fore time and time again. as John alluded, came to the form at the end of the game. The last day, the defending for Jiren Mertens' goal was just absolutely mind-boggling, I have to say. Like, you know, if it was under 12s that did it, you'd be tearing your hair out. So
very similar to the James Carr goal a few years back.
There's a long line of those goals, you know, or those type of scores that you can pick out, you know, that have been plundered against this team over the last 4 or 5 years. So it's still the same things and the same Achilles heel for them. The big thing is, you know, can we function up top and put enough scores on the board while holding their guys up the far end? We've been successful. You know, we certainly were successful doing that last year. You know, we dominated them in the second half. But again, a lot will depend on, you know, they look to have a fully fit squad. We have issues there. So a lot will depend on what we can get out on the pitch in 2 weeks' time.
Just in terms of Paul Conroy, I mean, he's obviously a man who likes scoring against Mayo as well. Like, not only is he guaranteed a few points every day against Mayo, you're absolutely guaranteed, because he scored the winning point in the 2008 final as a 19-year-old. So he's that long on the go. So he would be of the same era as Aidan. So, I mean, here's a question now. Is with Jordan Flynn out, which we think he almost certainly is, would you field Aidan O'Shea in the middle of the park against Paul Conroy, or do we do something different? Like, do we pull something out of the box, like putting Oisin Mullen in there with Matty or what?
Yeah, so you could there's one or two things you can do there, I would say, John, and you sort of hit the nail on the head. Like, do you go out and fight fire with fire and try to dominate him, right? Try to dominate him physically. Or the other thing, you know, do you try and run him up and down the field? But I don't think they'll allow that to happen. So if Mayo push, obviously, Matthew and maybe Oisin in the middle of the park, Paul Conroy isn't going to play there. You know, they'll probably pull one of the wing forwards. You know, they might start Sean Kelly in the middle of the field. You know, they won't put him in a situation where he's having to tag someone like Matty Rowan or having to tag someone like Oisin Mullen. They'll probably leave him in a free role and try and get him in the pocket and try and get him to kick points. They'll probably mitigate against that. So, look, it would be perfect, you know, a perfectly plausible scenario from our perspective to put Aidan out there on him, because there wouldn't be a massive amount of danger in terms of Aidan getting caught out with legs. And with Jordan out, it's probably the logical thing and probably the thing the guys are looking at.
Lads, I'm conscious that this is the Any Other Crack podcast, and I think one of the rules from the very outset was that we actually would not talk about the Mayo senior football team. But like all good GA rules, of course, we're going to completely ignore it and carry on.
There's one man amongst us with a pint here, so it's kind of it is that kind of chat, isn't it?
But yes,
at least not me.
For our listeners, of course, we are going to touch on other topics. We're going to go to the Mayo under 20s. We're going to cover the Mayo Camogie team with a great win over the weekend. We're going to look ahead into this week's paper, and we're going to cover a bit of Mayo club football before, of course, our clubhouse section. Before we get to that, we'd also like to thank Nigel Reeve Printing and Office Supplies for their very generous support to the podcast. Very relevant around this time of the year if you need your club programs for all those big Kelly Cup and Michael Walsh league games. But that brings us on, of course, to the Mayo under 20s, who had a big win against Galway last Wednesday night in Bacon. And yeah, as a vintage night in Bacon as you were going to get. Again, felt sorry for the cameraman for TG Cahir, but Mayo got over the line with a 1-6-1-4 win. I think 2 points each at halftime, but Mayo cracked on and hit 1-4 without reply. The goal coming from Jack Fallon of Mayo Gales. Galway kept Mayo honest all the way, of course, to the end with a late goal, bringing the scoreline a bit closer. But lads, a big win for Mayo. 2 years in a row against Galway, but we were in this position last year as well. And, you know, nothing is certain. Where do we go from here, Drakey?
Well, that's all it is. It's a good win, and you know, Morris will. That's all he'll see it as. It's a means to an end. It's a mechanism to get to a Connacht semi final, which is against Leitrim, obviously, and you know, then you know they'll be treating that again as what it is. It's a knockout game. But look, you know, it's always good to beat Galway. You couldn't take a lot from the game, I have to say. Your conditions were just they were absolutely diabolical. And look, the question has to be asked again here, and I know there are certain rules in the book in relation to this. You know, if you know, I think it all has to be played indoors or none of it. But putting fellas out, you know, in those conditions, trying to get them to play any sort of with any sort of quality is actually unfair to lads, to be quite honest. And it's nearly teasing them as well when they're on the pitch and they're looking what's 20 yards from them when they realise that, you know, they could be in there playing a great game. You know, they'd have been better off move it to somewhere else where they wouldn't have to look at that dome for 60 minutes. And Mayo did what they had to do, really. To me, they were probably the better team. I like to look at the Mayo team, actually. On paper, it reads well. Some strong players. The spine of the team is very, very good. Obviously, you know, with a nice flavour of senior experience there, Rory Kane and Sam Callanan and the two boys midfield, Dunnick and Frank Irwin. And up top, at times they look dangerous, but again, it was difficult conditions for forwards. But there is a nice balance to the team. There looks to be a good mix of, you know, good, solid defenders, a very, very good midfield, and some good attackers as well. You know, a good, powerful half forward line. I love the look of Jack Fallon. You know, I watched a lot of him last year from Mayo Gaels. He's a really talented lad. Paddy Hennigan really impressed me when they played against Balahedrin in the championship last year. He's very noticeable, but a good footballer, and a nice bit of thrust to him.
Great hairstyle too, Drakey. That was
fantastic hairstyle. Look, I'm jealous of all these guys. I noticed it when we played them over at Moore last year, the championship. And again, like these guys, the ponytails and whatnot, you know, pulling the piss out of guys like me. It's unfortunate. But look, I do like the look of the team. I'd like to see it in better conditions. But the one thing you can say, and Morris has been exceptional at this over the last couple of years. You know, he sets up his teams so well. You look at obviously NUI Galway in the Sigerson Cup. You know, beating much more vaunted opponents through sheer force of will, great setup, great defensive structure, you know, great transition and attacking structures as well. He's developing so well, and delighted for Morris as well, because I played a bit under Morris Sigerson going back a long, long time, and he's managing teams, you know, and on the go and learning his craft a long time, and he's really, really coming to the fore now. So, yeah, look, be interested to see what they do. Next game, obviously, is the big one. It's an important one. The next goal is to get to a kind of final and go from there.
Yeah, we heard throughout the Sigerson Cup, after their victory, the NUI players constantly repeating the phrase "structure beats chaos." Yeah. I think it was, which Morris has been obviously preaching. You know, that was a game, obviously, the last day, John, where structure was going to win out. Athletic, powerful players, strong runners was going to win out. Has Morris learned a lot from that game, though?
Well, it's difficult to know because the conditions were biblical, weren't they? You know, and I mean, I think all we can say is that Mayo, I think, used the conditions more intelligently than Galway did. Even though I wasn't there, but I gathered that the wind was blowing more or less diagonally, I think. So even though you had the wind with you, it wasn't really with you. And I thought Mayo used the conditions better in the second half. They didn't do anything really daft. I think was it Tom O'Culhane had a free at the end of the first half, and he hit this crazy banana shot. And that kind of just showed how wild the conditions were as much as anything else. But I thought that they weren't as controlled in how they used the ball. But I agree with Stephen about, like, Morris, I think, has really shown his chops this year, because when you think about it, he didn't have those five lads at all in the Leo Murphy Cup, and I think they really suffered for that, because they went down to a few bad defeats in that, and it looked like, you know, they weren't a team that were going to achieve a lot, and I think because of that goal we were fancy to win the last night, but they just slotted in, like in Andonagh McHugh's case, he was on the bench in Croke Park, so how much access would Morris have got to him? I think very, very little, and probably not a whole pile more to the rest of them as well. But if you look at the guys who really dominated, Rory Keane absolutely dominated Tom O'Culhane. He was hardly in the game at all. Sam Callanan, I thought, was very, very impressive the way he drove forward. The two bucks in the middle, like, were really, you know, were on top there. And Paddy Heenan, as we said already, you know, was to the fore as well. So I thought that was really impressive how with limited time he was able to get that team to gel. And I was very impressed with them. I thought, like, we're a bit unlucky that it was only 2 points. Like, I think 5 or 6 would have been a fairer margin.
I think so. And yeah, other good performances on the night as well. Keane O'Connell from Ballarobe.
Have to mention the Ahamore man, Tom O'Flaherty.
Yeah, excellent performance. Fenton Kelly from Davits. I know they rate them really highly. Really big, strong, athletic player. I think played most of the game at kind of full back, in the full back line, from what I can see.
Connor Reid came on as well, did well.
Bob Toohey got a nice as well.
Yeah, a few Davis lads as well, and they won the minor A there during the week too. So, a lot of good work going on there too, which is good to see. But they're a good strong athletic side now, and I'd be really interested to see them, you know, when conditions are a bit more placid. There's a bones of a good team there, and they're well coached, and you know, you cannot beat that at this level. The teams that are well coached, you know, inevitably, you know, seem to do quite well, because as John said, you don't have that access to guys all the time. And where there's a good system where guys can slot in and out, and where, you know, the player as such isn't as important as the system of play, and guys are tuned into that, very, very important at that level.
Well, what about the other half of the draw, lads? Because obviously it's not, you know, this isn't just a replication of senior. This Sligo team are good, aren't they? This would be the Sligo team that would have won minor. So they're obviously strong. Mayo beat Roscommon in the Leo Murphy Cup, but again, you don't know how many players they were missing. I mean, and they're obviously the defending county champions. So there's a fairly major hurdle to get over here before getting out of the province.
Wide open. It must be wide open. I don't know a massive amount, but obviously, yeah, it is the Sligo team that won the county title. You know, so they will certainly see this as an opportunity. And of course, Roscommon are kind of champions. And again, look, Leitrim, you know, it won't be an easy game, or it won't be an easy place to go to. They're coming in a sense that there's a feel-good factor around football in Leitrim now at the moment, with Andy and the guys up there. They had a very, very good league. You know, desperately unlucky not to get promoted from Division 4, you know, coming off the back of, you know, analysts horriblest last year, where they didn't win a game at any level, hurling, football, anything. So,
Stephen, has Andy got any role at under 20, do you know?
No, aside from being joined with the guys, I don't think so. But look, knowing Andy, he will obviously have, he'll have a foot in the door there, and he'll be looking at the guys, and he'll be engaged with the guys as well. But yeah, look, you know, they'll see it as an opportunity as well. It was always a tough place to go. I remember playing under 21 against Leitrim a couple, you know, we played them actually the 3 years I was under 21. And bar the first year in McHale Park, where we beat them well, the 2 years after that, you know, it was an absolute struggle down in Carrick and Shannon both times. We got out by a point 1 year and 2 points the following year. So always tough, always difficult. And again, it's another hurdle for the guys to negotiate. And they won't look any further or beyond that.
Lads, just a shout out for TG Cahir on that. The match is being streamed on their YouTube channel live tomorrow evening. So that's brilliant. And they did that for the other semi-final. And the final is going to be on TG Cahir on the TV.
Just on that, Ricky, I'm not going to let you go full Yerra on Leitrim here. Let's call a spade, you know, where we should be getting past Leitrim. Morris won't admit it, and he won't thank me to say this, but he is getting past Leitrim. Answer me this, though. Going back on last year, what happened? You know, after getting over that Galway team, it seemed like there was such an effort to beat Galway at the time. There was so much hype about this Galway team. And then after that, it just seemed like they just put so much effort into Galway, they forgot what was ahead of them. You know, how much do you think that has affected Morris? How much is he drilling into his players that, you know, this is where the work starts? Or is he drilling it into them at all?
I certainly think he's probably a bit more stoic in his approach this year. And a bit, you know, more focused in that regard. Look, it's a fickle, again, these age groups can be they can be very, very fickle. And I suppose, you know, from 20 to 21s, they were older guys, probably a bit more mature. You go back to 20s, they're young guys, they're 19-year-olds. they're not fully developed in that regard mentally. So it's more difficult to get at them on a sort of a level playing field, so to speak, in that regard from a psychological perspective. I remember myself, you know. So obviously, yeah, when you beat the All-Ireland champions favourites, you know, penalty shootout, you know, everything that goes with that, the fanfare and furore and whatnot, you can get carried away in it all. Other thing as well, you know, Roscommon have been so, so strong, you know, at minor and under 20 level for, you probably go back to when they won the All-Ireland in 2008, you know, whenever it was, the minor All-Ireland in 2006, I think it was. They've been so consistent at both those levels, and you're not getting an easy game from a Roscommon team. They focus massively on underage. They put a huge amount of work into it. They have good people involved in it. So, look, you'll never get an easy game, no matter who you beat, you know, at that level against Roscommon. It was very, very unfortunate from my own perspective that they just didn't perform. But yeah, I think there's probably a bit more stoicism about this team, and about probably Morris, and a bit more experience involved there now.
But I think you hit the nail on the head at the end there, Stephen, because I mean, that was a damn good Roscommon team.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, they made an All-Ireland final. Yes. So, you know, yeah. they were never going to be a pushover. And there was an awful lot to like about that Roscommon team in terms of the way they played the game that evening. I mean, they had a fabulous open style, and they brought that on after that as well, you know. So oh, yeah. I mean, they had a great year last year, you know. But I think you're right. I think we learned a lot from that, and hopefully we'll see the fruits of that this year.
Yeah, just a couple more questions on this, John. Expectation now is with this under 20 team, though it's a Connacht title really after this. For Morris, for this team, after beating Galway, after the disappointment last year, Mayo supporters aren't going to accept anything other than a Connacht final here. Maurice Sheridan, my clubmate, is not gonna thank me for saying that, but you know, there is a bit of pressure there now.
Oh, that's the expectation for sure. And I think it's probably there's even more pressure on it because our record at underage level over the past 10 years hasn't been great. Now I know we've the minor All Ireland in 2013 in the same group, then went on to win under 21 in 2016. But aside from that, the cupboard is bare enough. So I think we're due a few provincial titles at underage level, and definitely having, you know, look, at any year I think we beat Galway anywhere in anything, you expect us to go on and win Connacht, and I think it's no difference with this group.
Yeah, and that game is live on Wednesday evening, as John said, live on TG Carr, 6:30. Or for those who want to travel, it is in
Mark. Yeah, it's on. This one is streamed on the YouTube channel. Yeah, at 6:30. It's on. The final is on the television. I was very impressed with Sam Callanan the last day. I just thought in the conditions, particularly in the first half, he drove us forward into the wind, and he set up what could have been a goal chance inside the first 2 minutes. I thought, you know, he looks at home at this level. I thought he didn't look massively out of place in the few times he played for the seniors this year, and this for a lad who hasn't yet done his leaving cert is just astonishing. So I think he's definitely one to watch. I've always liked the cut of Rory Keane as well, and I think the fact that he put manners yet again on Tom O'Callaghan shows that he's got the right stuff as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot of talent in that team.
Tricky.
Yeah, those two boys I totally agree with. As I said, yeah, look, I thought the midfield were both excellent. It was interesting. It was the first time I'd seen Duncan McHugh midfield, actually, and I thought he was really, really good. I've seen him in a defensive setting so far, so that was really interesting. Tom O'Flaherty actually had a really good game from Ahamore. Give a shout out to Anise, my old man. And Jack Fallon, you know, look, I thought Jack was outstanding in the Intermediate Championship last year, one of the star performers in a very difficult championship and a very competitive championship at 19 years of age. So again, I think he's a typical sort of midfield half forward now in the modern age, you know, strong, athletic, carries ball well, you know, physical. And I thought he looked really, really good. Paddy Heenan as well had a fine game. Again, in difficult conditions, I always like to see forwards who can stand up in harsh conditions, win their own ball, look dangerous, It augurs well for sunnier, brighter days when it's a lot easier sort of secure possession and look good.
Speaking like a true forward there, Drakey. Yeah, I can't disagree with you, lads. I think it was clear to see the lads who played, who have experience from playing a bit of senior football this year. I think they stood out head and shoulders above the rest of them. Frank Irwin is another player, I think, who I'm looking forward to seeing over the next few months. Wasn't as impressive the last night as we know he can be, but you know, absolutely stacked with talent, and no doubt have a promising Mayo future ahead for whatever lies ahead. But that brings us on, John. Mayo Camogie had a big win in the Division 4 over the weekend. I know you've been following these for the last few years.
Yeah, they really are. I think an undersold Mayo success story of the last 2 years, because County returned to playing Camogie at adult level only last year after an absence of several years, and they had a good run in Division 4 last year. I think they were beaten in the semi-finals from memory. And then they went on to win the cup they were in for the championship was the Nancy Murray Cup, and they went on and they won that, and they won that convincingly. And what's more, they beat Tyrone in the final, which is something that the men's footballers failed to do. But anyway, so this year they've now just won the Division 4 of the league. It's first ever league title that that we've ever won in Camogie. So that's a big achievement, and obviously promotion with it as well. And they're now in the Premier Junior Championship. So it's all like it really is a team that's on the rise, managed by good Ahamore man, Jimmy Lyons. That's a team that's going places, and fair play to them.
Yeah, it's an incredible achievement, really. Look, I'm not going to sit here and say that I know an awful lot about them, because I don't, but from what I know about the Mayo senior hurlers, and one of the big complaints is that, you know, they have four clubs to pick from. That's basically their pool. I'd imagine the Mayo Camogie team is even less than, you know,
it's much the same. Yeah, it's because it's if you like the Turin equivalent, the Nabrijogi, and they bring most of them, but there's a few from other places, well, notably Westport. I think Lisa Scahill actually got the two goals on Sunday in the league final. But it would be mainly from the same neck of the woods.
No, great to see again. You know, as you said, I wouldn't profess to know a whole lot about them, but it's great to see the game promoted, and it's great to see, you know, the girls driving forward and progressing. Again, I'd imagine under difficult circumstances, they obviously don't have the support. Certainly, probably don't have the support of even the Mayo of the men's hurlers. So, you know, there's a lot of good work going on in hurling in the county, and you know, I know from my own club, you know, Cashel Gaels have been a great success story over the last number of years, and they've gotten to senior level now this year for the first time. And it would be great to see that translated, you know, to the ladies as well, and see can we develop the game a bit more and get more clubs involved to get more people playing. Because ultimately what you want to do, you want to give young kids more options to play, you know, different games and different sports in the county. Football isn't for everyone. You know, for a young guy or a young girl, they might have no interest in football. So, you know, is there a mechanism there for them to play hurling? Is there a mechanism there to play camogie if it would interest them? I think the more we can give kids in that regard, the better. So look, this is great to see, and you know, long may it continue.
Absolutely, and a massive congratulations to players, managements and officials in getting that title over the line. Massive achievement. In this week's Mayo News, I know the lads were working very hard in the absence of Mike Finnerty there. I think he just kind of got up and left there last week and said nothing. Kind of like the Premier League footballers, I think when the international break comes around, they all just get on their jets and just go ever. I think Mike and Rod...
This is a sky break. This is for Finno, is it? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Junket, Spice, I think he's actually called officially. Yeah. But make sure you pick up into this week's paper. You'll read Mike's interview with Mayo under 20 manager Morris Sheridan as they previewed the Galway game. The legendary Sean Rice sets the scene ahead of the start of Mayo's championship later this month. And we have extensive coverage of the county minor finals that took place over the weekend. Wins there for Ardmoy, McHales and Moy Davitt in the B and A championships respectively. That brings us on to club football. Drakey, big news. You're now down playing in the sunny southeast. Transfers has gone through. How has it been? Give us some insight.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been interesting. Yeah, Sunny Southeast is very apt, Ger, because it's absolutely mad. Like the pitches, like this time of year, we played three games now so far. So we've won two and we lost one in the league. And the three games we played, so we played Kyle Nairn in the first game. We played, I can't remember the name of the second one. I'm not there yet with the names. And we played a club called St. Fintan's last weekend. So they're outside Wexford Town. They had a fabulous new pitch, new dressing rooms. But again, the pitches down there are rock solid. So it's like playing July football in April. But it is certainly the Sunny Southeast in that regard. Interesting. Yeah, really good standard, I have to say. So there's three teams in Navena and Goria senior level. So it's intermediate A, which is junior basically, and then junior. Three adult men's teams. They're putting out big town now. There's about 10,000 people in it. But a good high standard, I would say. Very different game now to Mayo, I would say. A lot more open, to be quite honest. Less structure in terms of blanket defences. A lot more contact, so you'd know it's hurling country, which I'm delighted with, to be quite honest. Referees let you away with far more now than I'm used to, so, which is just bloody brilliant.
You should have moved down years ago, Drakey.
Moved down years ago. It's just fantastic, yeah. But actually, you know, really, really good quality, I have to say. Like, look, just to give you a bit of context, so the community school in Goree just won the All-Ireland B Colleges title there a couple of weeks back, which is the same championship St. Nathie's won in 2000 in Bala, which basically a lot of it formed the basis of our senior team that moved on there and obviously won a couple of county titles. So very, very high standard. But obviously the pull from hurling is very, very evident. And that's one thing I certainly am induced to. So last weekend, you know, senior hurlers and senior footballers were playing. So we were down a lot of numbers, lost by a couple of points in our league game. So like that sort of stuff. And obviously, look, hurling is king down there as well. But look, the standard is very, very high, and a lot of good quality footballers down there. And look, I'd like if the pitches were a little softer. But look, you can't do everything. You can't do everything.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
Yeah, it sounds like a world apart from what it is currently in Mayo at the minute. I know 2 weeks ago, actually, the pitches were fantastic after the summer we had there that lasted all about 5 days. And in the last couple of weeks, I know our pitch in Ball, it's funny, you're talking about Balladreen being in a hole a number of years ago. I actually found out there very recently that the Ball pitch is actually the lowest point in the village. The very lowest
Good
point.
God.
Yeah. So you can only imagine what that leads to, right underneath that big hill there leading from the golf course as well. So yeah, perfect, but pitch not so great, getting a lot of use and all that. Obviously we're not in playing league football yet, we're very much in still divisional cups. Michael Walsh, just a quick rundown of how it's going. Swinford had a good win over Balladreen there over the weekend in the Centenary Cup. Drakey, Bohol and my dad did a good victory over Ballyhonus. Yeah. Who else are we looking? Charlestown had a victory over Kelshamaw 3-8 to 4 points in the Sweeney Cup. Ballina Stephenites bet Belmullet 115-107. Kiltane bet Bunnyconlon 12-8, and Crossman Ideal Rovers had a 110-109 victory over Ardnery Sarfields. In the Kelly Cup, Castlebar Mitchells are flying high under Barry Moore, and I think a good young team had a good victory over Ballintubber there at the weekend, 12-9 in Clogher. And that's after a good victory over Westport there a couple of weeks ago as well. Westport themselves had a 3-14, 12-point victory over Lewisburg at the weekend. In the Kelly Cup Group 2, Ball had a 10-216 victory over Park. Come on, Ball. Bershul had a 1-13-27 victory over Brafey. And in Kelly Cup Group 3, Turmacady had a 14-15 victory over Turmacady. Down to South Mayo in the O'Mara Cup, I think Highmount Paramore had a big victory against Gary Moore, 1-8-9 points. And Mayo Gael's had a big victory against Shulian Carib as well, 3-12 to 10 points. So lay of the land is in Mayo over the next 6 weeks. It's still going to be Kelly Cup, Michael Walsh before league in the start of June. Obviously, it's a lot different to what it's in Wexford at the minute, Ricky. Is that a good thing from your perspective, playing the league early, or would you like to see it a bit later?
No, look, from my perspective, you know, I love games, and I always, and still now, even though I die after them, always value getting games into the legs. You cannot replicate it and you cannot beat it. So as long as you're getting through them at this time of the year and not getting injured, it's worth 3-4 training sessions. So I'm delighted, and there's a lot of league games. There's 12 league games this year, and there's other cups as well. So the way it goes in Wexford, so we'll play the league now over the next number of months, and then the hurling championship starts, and that's downtime for football. So that'll be filled with sort of challenge games, etc., etc. And then the football championship starts after that in September. But look, we get plenty of games in that regard. No, look, I would never complain or give out about playing games. Nothing better than it. You know, I'd take a game on a Sunday or a Saturday any day rather than training and slogging on a Friday and Sunday.
And what about the split season, lads? How do you think, it's obviously too early to judge of it, but, you know, the All-Ireland final is going to be, 17th of July or whatever. And then it should be a clear calendar for clubs thereafter. I mean, that's got to be a big, big difference for a club, for both hurling and football at club level.
I think the biggest thing about the split season is it's not really a split season anymore. I think, it was great in theory, but I think in practice, I don't think it's actually possible given the sheer volume of games that has to take place. It's split season in the sense that championship is going to take place right after the inter-county season, and we're not going to have, one round of championship beforehand. Obviously, the league is going to take place during the inter-county championship as well. So, that's not really a split season. I think it was a good idea in theory, but I just can't see it being effectively rolled out over the next couple of weeks. A big thing as well, Drake and John, you can come in on this too. I know there's been quite a lot of people giving out about Romeo is starting the league in June. You're going to have a lot of teams who are losing lads to America. And I think particularly this year, given the fact that we're just out of lockdown for 2 years, lads didn't get the chance to do that J1. So now they're going, and they're going in the numbers. I was looking at the live transfer list today, and to see some of the players who have moved on. Colin Moore from Westport has transferred to Kevin Barry's. Pat Barrett from Belmuller has gone to Toronto Gales. Callum Kine and Johnny Mahan from Mitchell's are gone to Vancouver. Keane Ferreter and Niall Walsh from Hollymount Carrimore have left as well, respectively. Niall Feehan has left Kilmina and gone to St. Finian's in Canada. Owen Lavin from Kashima has transferred out to Australia to Clonmacnoise, and Lewsburg lost three players, Edward Ball, Ben Cox and Pierce O'Malley to Vancouver. And TJ Byrne as well from Kashima has gone to John McBride's. So yeah, there's a lot of movement. Obviously, it's going to affect the league in one way. John, do you think it's going to take away from the standard, the credibility of it, the seriousness that clubs are going to take it, or is it just something that we have to get over and maybe it's going to be a once-off this bad because of the circumstances?
Yeah, it's probably is a once-off in the sense that it's quite as bad as that. I mean, I think there would have been quite a bit of movement anyway in your average pre-COVID year, wouldn't there? But I guess given the timing of it and given the fact that that summer was supposed to be, or certainly a good bit of the summer was supposed to be left over to clubs, I think it'll be more noticeable this year than in other years. But I suppose this is the first year where we're attempting to be post-COVID, and I think it's very, very difficult to blame any young person because I have a few of them. They're not even in the house anymore. But if they're bullying for a road. They want to be moving. And young lads who play football, it's the same. You know, if they have an opportunity to play in America, Australia, or Canada, they'll do it.
Yeah, I think it's hard to blame them. You know, I wasn't in favor of starting the league. I know there's cause out there to start the league in March, April when the players are around, but I wasn't in favor of that at all. It's not conducive to trying to live a normal life and play club football, because if you're trying to play league football in March and April, the pitches are bad now as it is, and we're midway through April. you know, in March, it's just not enjoyable. It's a slog. Facilities and clubs in the majority of the county, they're just not able for it. And that would also see clubs come back training in January time, which would bring the season end potentially to October, potentially further. You're talking a 10-month season. You know, June isn't perfect. It's not perfect. You know, we're going to lose a lot of lads. I know we're losing five or six in Ball to America, and you can't play them. But, you know, you just have to get on with it. You just have to play it. You know, I like this format of starting league later on. You know, we haven't really got very, very intensive in our training. It's, you know, been kind of once a week, match at the weekend, do a small bit of a light session during the week. Obviously, it's going to start ramping up now. And to me, it's fine. You know, you can take the moments.
I guess the interesting thing will be, what's the championship going to be like? Because certainly the last 2 years, we've had two absolutely brilliant club championships. And I think there's been a wide engagement amongst, if you could call it the casual supporter, that has been really engaged in club football in a way that I've never experienced before. And so it's happened twice. So you could say, well, it's not a fluke, but it'd be really interesting to see, will that engagement be there and that level of quality be there again this year?
Yeah, that's the key, really. You know, it is, you know, you want to get people engaged in the club championships, right? With the best will in the world, no matter what you do, right? You're not going to get these people engaged with, you know, your Centenary Cups, your Michael Walsh Cups, the league. You know, it's always and ever going to be the diehard supporter, the parents, you know, the people who go to every single game within these clubs that are going to go, you know, to these games, with the odd exception, if you might get a local rivalry, Ballacharistown back in the day, whatever, or what, you know, Ballina or whoever, get Cross Malina playing in, you know, in North Mayo, you know, playing in North Mayo. You know, they're the anomalies in that sense. But you know, what John has said there, like, the club championships have been absolutely incredible the last 2 years. And they've been put on a platform that I've actually never seen in all my years. And you know, that's you know, I'm nearly embarrassed to say at this stage, that's 20 years sort of playing senior football. It was wonderful, wonderful to see, and the spectacle and, you know, the furore that surrounded them and the focus they got and the focus the players got, which is more important, which is the most important thing, because, you know, the effort the guys put in, and I know it and you know it as well, Ger, you know, to see them, you know, being put center stage and to hear people around the county talking about these club footballers, talking about the club footballers in Kilmina, in Belmullet, you know, wherever, all over the county. It was wonderful to see. And that's the acid test. Can we keep that going? Can we keep marketing this championship? These championships are phenomenal. You know, junior, intermediate, senior. The quality of game I watched last year, or saw last year, was just tremendous. And, you know, the trick now is, how do we, you know, get people to continue to buy into that as we move forward? Because the product is brilliant. I said it last year, the product in Mayo at club level is just phenomenal. It needs to be marketed well and protected and put forward. And people need to be encouraged to, the appetite needs to be created for it continuously.
Yeah, I think we could probably agree on that. Obviously, the format isn't perfect, but it does still allow the club championship to flourish. When it does flourish, like it did last year, the county game is just, it's a back thought. You know, how Mayo did, it's a back thought. You know, you are all about your club there. County players are all about their club. And as you said, from a supporter perspective, from a player perspective, it's just, you know, it's a joy to be around.
Yeah, and the great thing last year was just the romance of the Balmullet story, you know, like it club to come from, they weren't even fancy to get out of their group, and they went all the way to the final and gave the final a right good rattle as well.
Yeah, we have to go down to Balmullet now on Saturday evening in the Michael Walsh Cup, and that's going to be really romantic, John, I think. Yeah. But on that note, lads, we'll leave it for tonight. Thanks a million for joining us. Of course, our Patreon members can head on over to our clubhouse section, where we'll have another exclusive bit of conversation. But John Gunnigan and Stephen Drake, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Ger.
Likewise, Ger.